This is All Things Education, a podcast where three-decade teachers discuss what they know.
The good, the not-so-good, and the continuous opportunity for high-quality education in Texas.
Join us for a smart conversation as we dig deep into the issues that affect us all in and around our great state.
And here are those three spiffy instructors now.
Hello again, and welcome back to our monthly chat about all things education. I'm Natalie Arias, an art teacher from San Antonio, Texas, joined by two gentlemen and scholars.
Two spiffy gentlemen and scholars. My name is Lance Barish. I teach high school math in the DFW Metroplex in North Texas.
Gentlemen, maybe spiffy? Yeah, I'll go with that. Hi, I'm Matthew Balter. I am a electives teacher in Austin, Texas.
Hey guys, it's finally starting to feel like fall down here in the south central part of the state. I don't know about you guys. It's a nice crispy 67, 68 degrees right now.
Oh, don't say six or seven, Natalie, please. Not now.
We need to do a whole episode on secondary level colloquialisms. I think would be a hilarious episode for sure. But that truly is the temperature out here. I checked my app on my phone a minute ago. How's it feeling in y'all's parts of the state?
Oh God, it's awful. It's still what? So hot here.
Is it?
Oh no.
I don't know. This morning when I walked outside, it was like okay, but what is it gonna be like 90 or something in Austin? Oh, I hate this. It's also bone dry. But sure, I got a pair of fall boots that I'm excited about.
All right.
So those came in the mail, and
that's a big win.
Yeah, that's a big win. Yeah, fall attire is the best, but right
it really
now
is.
It's still too hot.
Well, I don't want to rub it in, but it's pretty nice up here, and we did just have a huge thunderstorm yesterday, so it's not dry either. Anyways, it's practically spiffy.
Fall sort of marks the beginning of the collective shift toward rest, right? Like in nature, everything's getting ready to enter a season of dormance and restoration. But in most businesses, and definitely in schools, we're as busy as ever. From a practice standpoint, these aren't probably the first things that come to mind when you think about teachers planning lessons and content. Like, how are we going to incorporate the season? But for those new to the profession, especially, the primary focus is content delivery. How do I teach kids what rhetorical devices are and how to use them in their writing? Or how do I illustrate the anatomy of a cell? But with longevity in practice, we start to broaden that planning from the perspective of creating an educational experience for our students. And these are valuable things to factor in, because when they're waking up in the morning, trudging their way to school, it's different for them when they're thinking, God, it's so hot outside when I'm walking to school, versus, ooh, this is nice and crisp and cozy. And that might seem a little far-fetched, but I wonder if either of you consider that in your planning, even if it's just in like the greeting of your students, or even acknowledging that with your students. Like, is it something that you connect on? For example, have you guys seen the guy on social media that's gone viral who's like outside and he's like, do you guys know something about in your 30s, that crisp, cool fall morning and a leaf crunch? Oh my God. Like he's freaking out about all these like nerdy, easy, simple moments, like just the simple things to be grateful for. Have y'all seen that at all on social media?
No, but I'm
you are
have
speaking
to
a foreign language.
Okay, I'm going to have to send it to you because it's so great and it's so relatable and the kids know it. And I have been greeting them at the door with that, which is a funny start to our class period.
That's
but
hilarious.
In general, are y'all feeling the fall vibe yet personally, besides your boots in the mail? And professionally, is there anything in particular that you do at school or in your classroom this time of year with regard to that, like changing season outside of the bubble?
Personally, I don't I don't think I do anything really in terms of like the season change. Right now, though, it is spooky October and we are writing horror stories in my intro to creative writing
Love
class.
it.
So the kids are really sort of like jazzed about that.
Do you lean into much Edgar Allan Poe?
Oh, yeah, Telltale Heart. They love that. And a few of them always like freak out and I feel really bad. But I give them fair warning. I'm like, you guys can step out of the room if you want to, if you think you're going to be too
scared. It is pretty creepy. It's a creepy ending.
No, it's really disturbing. I probably shouldn't be using this, but I don't know. It's too good of a story not to. We use the modified, age-appropriate version of the story. Sure. But
math is always spooky, Lance, so you don't really have to do that.
How dare you?
Is it your quest this time of year to affirm to students that math is not spooky?
You know what? I'm not leaning into the stereotype today. My students love math, and we love talking about it in my classroom. There you go.
You're an excellent teacher. I wish you were my math teacher. I'd probably feel much differently about it.
I'd probably feel a lot older if I was your math teacher.
That's amazing. Well, for today's episode, I want to lean into this bigger idea of an educational experience, including but beyond the content. I'd like to explore that experience from various stakeholder perspective and the impact that stakeholders can and do have in their own experience and relative to that of others. Are y'all game?
Oh, yes.
This moment
our whole lives.
That didn't sound scripted at all.
That wasn't scripted at all.
But Natalie, I do have a question. What is an educational experience? What are
I'm
you referring
to? You asked, Lance.
Not scripted.
So when I say educational experience, I'm referring to the experience of anyone who interacts with schools. Anybody who sets foot on a school, you are having an experience. And of course, the people who spend the most time in that experience are the ones who are attending every day, teachers, students. But there's also a lot of parents that are involved on the campus day to day in extracurricular capacities and things like that. Other terms often used to address that kind of experience for all those named stakeholders is a campus climate and culture. If you think about it, all of those same named stakeholders we've been talking about who are having this experience have a role in creating it, developing it, executing it, and in some cases, protecting that experience. There's so much conversation about what needs to be done in schools outside of schools, and then what's actually happening on the inside, boots on the ground, is what I want to take a closer look at. Because I feel like there's a way for us to maybe bridge the gap, the disconnect between those policy decisions that are made and the way that it's actually implemented and executed on a day-to-day basis. So first, let's examine that development piece, developing an experience. Aside from course content, teachers, along with all school staff in their respective roles, have to develop procedures for the logistics of accommodating large numbers of occupants in a school building for safety, for timeliness, and for efficiency in meeting everyone's needs and accomplishing all the various tasks required of any given day. The larger an organization is, the greater the opportunity for those procedures to conflict and or for something to be overlooked in terms of the actual implementation. While districts and campus mandates drive some of the procedural decision-making, the outcomes impact everyone, staff, students, and parents alike. In that sense, when you think about the logistical part, what opportunities exist for those stakeholders to leverage voice in the procedural decision-making at your campus? And maybe it's not about entry and exit. Maybe it's about disciplinary policy. Are there any things that you can think of or examples you can think of on your campus where the state said you have to do this, so the district said you have to do that, so the campus put this rule in place, but it doesn't really work?
I mean, there's myriad, right? It's a lot of things going on there in your question and a lot of really juicy parts. There are many formal opportunities for the stakeholders to kind of shape these things and also many informal. The formal looks like, a PTA meeting or a student council meeting, because you know parents and students are both considered to be stakeholders. In fact, really quickly, as an aside, sometimes we forget how central the role of the student is when we use the term stakeholder. They can drive their own educational experiences many times, whether it be through their clubs or student councils, I just mentioned, or other, you know, festivals that they plan and things of that nature. Broadening it back out to like the parent and teacher and you know, faculty level, there's so many formal opportunities. I mentioned PTA. We also have in Dallas a site-based decision-making committee, SBDM. I don't know if y'all have that in your, I think that's probably statewide. But that is a formal monthly meeting that the principal must attend, where you have to have representation from all of those groups I just mentioned. And they actually do talk about policy, like on the ground things, like the day-to-day things that we will be doing at our campuses. A lot of times too, we have to rely on institutional knowledge. The cell phone policies that we just rolled out this year was brand new, but the vast majority of the day-to-day operations have been going on at my campus for 30 plus years. And whenever we see some of these new personnel come in, like a new assistant principal that's gonna, you know, redesign all of the detention protocols, you see this large body of teachers being like, no, we do things this way here, you know? So that's another factor as well. There's just so many parts that make the school run from the top down. And Matthew, I'd love to hear more about what it's like at yours.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I mean, this is one of those examples where it takes a village, right? To raise a single child. And, you know, at my campus, it's one of the larger ones in Austin for sure. But we've got like 1,200-1,300 kids, huge staff, and so in a huge district, right? And so it's division of labor. I mean, in terms of like the logistics of lunch lines to, you know, disciplinary protocols to organizing the schedule to, you know, electives, all of that, you know, it different roles fall on different people. But, you know, a little bit more to your question, Natalie, I hope. There are also, given all of that, there are a number of ways that individuals, stakeholders, as you put it, can get involved with different parts of the decision-making process. Every Monday, we have, you know, coffee with the principal, right? An opportunity for anyone in the community to meet with the principal virtually or in person, have a cup of coffee, and just talk about whatever's coming up this week or whatever's coming up this month or whatever, and getting different input from that. PTA is another big example. Our district, I feel like with AISD, there's constantly a message coming out from the superintendent about a meeting that's open to the public at this time, at this place, virtually or in person, about this topic. So there's a lot of opportunity to hear about the decision-making process and kind of get a sense of why or what it is or what to sort of like look forward to. But there's also within that opportunities to, hey, voice your opinion. Does this make sense? Do you, you know, does this take into consideration this group of people or whatever?
This is great because I think that there are a lot of these opportunities that must exist, but I don't know that everyone understands what they can do with that opportunity, because I think a lot of parents and maybe even teachers hear that there's going to be a district meeting open to the public. I don't know that everyone feels empowered or even enlightened enough maybe to actually go and speak at those things, like maybe
maybe they hear an
open meeting so I can go listen to what they're talking about, but right. I don't know that everybody recognizes how crucial it is to actually speak up in those venues and opportunities. So Lance, you mentioned site-based decision-making meetings that are monthly. Are those hosted by your campus leadership or is that hosted by district leadership?
That's a campus specific, the site in question being our campus. And
that's basically what your coffee with the principal kind of facilitates, Matt, on yours?
Yeah, sounds similar. Yep.
I think so, with the one key contrast being that the SBDM is a very formal and district required initiative, whereas Coffee with the Principal sounds like a very lovely and maybe more informal.
Yeah, it's way more informal. It's chill time. You're just
right, both accomplishing objectives. Gossip.
So I'm trying to think of what they might call that in my district, and it sounds like it might be like a campus improvement planning committee meeting or sure. something like that. Which, again, I have to say, as having been in those types of meetings on those committees as a teacher, yes, we have some discussion in those meetings about how to accomplish whatever the district mandate is. But sometimes, if I'm being completely honest, I will say that those meetings are not as productive as they might be intended.
No, because, definitely not.
Yeah, I mean, for a couple of reasons. Like, one, because they usually happen at the end of the day when everybody's already exhausted and trying to get out of there. And a lot of times it can come down to a, let's just, okay, that works, tie a bow on it, let's go. Which isn't always super valuable and honest. But even in the ways that we try to make it meaningful and make it effective, I don't know that even some of my colleagues in those meetings feel like they're able to be totally honest about the truth and the implementation side. Like if we're, I'm thinking of an example a couple years ago when I was still in the classroom teaching high school credit classes, and we had a meeting like that about a high school credit campus goal specifically. And there were differing ideas about how we were going to get more students. The goal was ultimately to have more students successfully achieve the high school credit. And so a lot of the conversation was like, you know, how do we add more numbers to the rosters? And I kind of spoke up in that meeting and said, but before we talk about numbers on the roster, we're talking about the goal of numbers across the finish line. And if we're just throwing kids in a class that aren't really prepared for that level of work or the responsibility that comes with the requirements, for attendance and whatever else, then we're kind of setting them up to fail. And it's that level of dialogue and authentic, honest discussion that I think is the real opportunity. So I hope that whoever's listening that this resonates with, we're encouraging you in both ways to show up for those conversations, but also to engage in them honestly.
Yeah, and I'd like to just augment that point a little bit, because even having productive conversations when the people in the room are there trying to have them presupposes a consistency of attendance at these things, the same people coming, and to Matthew's very interesting point a minute ago, the motivation to come, because we all have a million things going on in our lives, right? We're all parents here. As a very discreet example, this week at my campus, we have parent conferences, right? Where it's a much, much, much more narrow goal. You know, it's the performance of your student in my classroom. And I know from historical attendance at these things to anticipate maybe 10 to 20% attendance at that of my student body. And that's for your kid, right? Your most precious of all of the things that you have a stake in. So now we're talking about campus-wide things or even potentially district-wide things. The motivation, it goes lower and lower and lower on the to-do list. And I really relate to that and understand that.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like a big sort of abstract Goliath, like where do you start with something like that when we think about the big picture like this? But the reason I wanted us to talk about it is because I want to highlight how those things really do impact the day to day so that we can work toward finding the solutions that make sense. But it's safe to say that the collective investment of all stakeholders at the campus level, parents, staff, and students, is crucial to developing an effective culture and a positive learning experience. It's incumbent even upon those same stakeholders to ensure that the execution and implementation of those decisions that are made and to monitor for continued improvements. Needs are dynamic, so it makes sense that the response would be flexible to meet the needs of an ever-changing organization. Implementation efforts can be interrupted sometimes altogether thwarted by district mandates in the form of various requirements or restrictions. This disconnect between the goings-on at the campus level and district offices are often the result of business, quote-unquote, decisions, or in response to policy enacted at the state level that inevitably tie to funding and accountability and all the things that the district office has to worry about from running the show as a business. But the conflict lies because at the campus, what are we always talking about when we're making decisions? What I hear all the time is what's best for kids. So the district is saying do what's best for kids, but also meet these business needs. And so that's where kind of things can get hairy and complicate the day-to-day operations, which inevitably and ultimately impact that learning experience that we're trying to cultivate for the kids on a daily basis. Here's an example. My district had post-COVID one-to-one device policy that they enacted. They utilized funding that was specific to the pandemic response for learning loss. How many times did we hear that phrase? To mitigate learning loss. So we didn't have a one-to-one device policy prior to COVID. COVID happened. Every student got their own device issued that was returned at the end of the year. They tried a couple different things over the years in terms of like having certain students keep them over the summer before they transitioned campuses. They did a number of things. I mean, of course, when you roll out that many devices to that many kids without a ton of supervision, there are going to be broken devices. There's going to be lost, money in that sense. So from the business side, they're thinking, how do we mitigate loss? This year, with funding cuts and a reduction in enrollment, the district has changed their one-to-one device policy in that the students are not issued those devices individually. So they do not have one that they carry around all day that is theirs. They don't have one that they take home. But every campus has exactly the number of enrolled students. They have that many devices, right? So on paper, it's one-to-one. However, in implementation, that has turned out to be that core class teachers have a cart with a class set of Chromebooks that stay in their room. And we have some teachers that are have split prep. So if they don't have all one core class, they don't have their own cart. So they have to coordinate to borrow the cart from wherever they can find one. Electives have three carts of 20 that they can disperse between theater, choir, orchestra, dance, Spanish. Spanish might have their own, actually. They have a language lab, so take them out. Art. There's like six or seven preps, right, that have to share three carts of 20, which is not a class set. I think that has since been consolidated to one cart of 30 because they needed to put them elsewhere. So all of this is a long-winded example of how the district is making decisions on paper for business, right? We have lower enrollment. We need to figure out how to cut cost. We still want every kid to have access to a device. On paper, this should make sense. In practice, I have not seen a Chromebook cart since the start of school, and I don't count on seeing one or having consistent access to one in order to plan a lesson around them. And our students don't have those devices to take home anymore. So teachers are having to shift in their practice because we're back to planning around who has access outside of school and who might not. In situations like this, how do we work towards solutions? And how can we impact solutions? Either using my example or if you think of one on your own campuses, like what are y'all's thoughts about that?
Yeah, this is a tough question to answer. It's really complicated. I can't help but like sort of like see the overlying problem here as being just public education has become way too bureaucratic, right? And bureaucracy in public education has been on the rise all the way back since the 1990s, but definitely in the early 2000s and more so. So by bureaucracy, I'm simply meaning that more and more jobs are opening up in administrative positions at the, you know, campus level, the district level, the state level. And you have so many different people making so many important decisions for something that they know nothing about. This bureaucracy is the death of public education because it just makes it really, really difficult, almost impossible, honestly, to be innovative. The system has just gone way too large. So like these decisions about Chromebooks and how many should be per campus and who makes those decisions, who knows who's making these decisions? It's certainly not the teachers or the students or the parents or probably not even the school. I don't know. I mean, like, it's, I think that like we're at a point right now and the pendulum, I hope, will one day swing the other way. But I think we're at a point right now where these kinds of decisions are just really complicated and difficult.
Well, that's the challenge, right? Is that, and what I see happening so much is that teachers, parents, students alike, it's like, I don't know about on your campuses, but on mine, it feels like currently and increasingly over recent years, everybody's just scrambling to try to check this box and meet this requirement under this restraint. I mean, all of us are just really struggling to keep it all going, but where's the optimization? Like, at what point do we put our hands up and say, wait a minute, time out, this is not working? And not just at what point, but where do we say that and how do we say it? Because we say that to our campus leaders and they point to the district. And we say that to our district leaders and they point to the state. And it's always this sort of, you know.
Yeah.
It is a tough one to solve. I don't have the answer to that. I hope our listeners were not hoping that Lance and Matt were going to come in and answer that great question of yours, Natalie, because here's a discrete, here's a very specific example. Since I've been at the school I currently teach at, we had a time where we changed the logo of the school, right? A seemingly superficial thing, and yet with so much depth to it, depending on how much you care about the logo of the school. Previously, it had been like a condor or some bird of prey. Is that a term? You know, some bird.
So. Sounds smart.
Some scary bird, right? One that might, you know, swoop down and pick up your dog as you're walking. And we realized that that didn't really fit our STEM school. So we went through the whole process. Jumping to the end, it's an atom now, right? It's awesome. Now, was that a 2 or 3 week decision? Or would you guess that it was like a 2 or 3 year decision? Which one is more likely?
Years.
With a lot of people being very upset and very opinionated.
Yes, and very opinionated, exactly. And that's the whole point, is that the stakeholders are entitled to their opinions, right, to bring it back. And, you know, from one meeting to the next meeting with a month in between, it was a graphic designer had to mock up 10 different options. And then there was another month of winnowing down through a, you know, school-wide vote. And then there was another month where parents got to vote, and then another month where kids got to vote. And so on the surface, I can say, wow, that bureaucracy and red tape was so annoying. Why couldn't it have just been this atom, right? But on the other hand, I'm really glad that all the stakeholders had their opinion heard on that as well. So where is the solution in the middle where it took us so long on something ostensibly not as important as, you know, policies that affect day-to-day operations? But, and yet, I'm very glad that nobody in the entire school community that I'm at can say their voice was not heard on that. You know, what's the solution?
Exactly. And I wonder how many like stakeholders realize that they can have any kind of influence. How many are listening now and thinking, I've never thought to speak up about the school logo that I don't like, or maybe that's an ongoing conversation that's happening somewhere, or the parent who's like, you know what? my kid cannot keep up with the requirements of the classes without access to a device at home. So this one-to-one situation that you've got going on at school doesn't work. How do we work around that? Like in the interest of student achievement. So I just, that's really, you guys are hitting on everything that I hoped that this episode might highlight, which is not just that there is an opportunity, but to look for them and to take them where you, or ask for them, ask for the opportunity, you know, in whatever venue possible. I also wonder to what extent any given stakeholder, a parent, a student, a teacher, really thinks about having a duty to protect the quality and integrity of our public school system. You're talking about the bureaucracy, Matt, and that really disempowers all of us that are in it every day. When we think of it in terms of like there's these higher ups and all the power lies with them, and we're just subject to, you know, the powers that be. And that is one approach we could take. Or I think what we're advocating for from the ground level is not to just throw our hands up and say, okay, you say jump, we'll say how high. Because at some point we can't jump any higher and it doesn't make sense, right? In Texas, I think it's normal for any one stakeholder, especially, to feel confined to the limits of their role. Like there's a lot of stay in your lane vibe. I don't know if you guys catch that, but sometimes when, even as a teacher who's a seasoned educator with experience on her resume, if I try to approach a conversation with a district leader, sometimes I'm given the air of stay in your lane. Like your job is in the classroom, you do that work. There's an awful lot of pointing fingers about problems and lack of accountability for solutions. When support is sought, you know, everybody's kind of throws their hands up and say, my hands are tied, like we were discussing earlier with that finger pointing. If everyone's hands are tied, who is actually doing what's best for student outcomes? This begs the huge question, like if we as parents go to our campus and the campus says, well, we're doing what we have to do because of this district mandate. And then the parent goes to the district and the district says, well, we're doing what we have to do because of what's happening at the state level. And the state level says that they're making decisions based on what parents want, right? So we've got this like cyclical impact where everybody's hands are tied. Whose job is it to untie those hands? Whose job is it to speak up and speak out, and through what channels? Like, how do we get anywhere with that? Are we just resigned to our hands being tied?
I mean, maybe. I hope that Matthew comes in with a more poignant and takeawayable solution here. My answer is it's the individuals doing the best that they can for the things that they care about with the bandwidth that they have to offer, right? And like, unfortunately, a school organism is not like an anthill. We don't have a queen that we're all trying to serve, and it's very obvious what the goals are. We all have different goals. And we all have different stakes. So I think it's just individuals making the best decision. Maybe after you listen to this episode, you just really quickly Google when your next school board meeting is that takes public comment and you go, right? Or maybe you go to your kids' parent conferences, as I mentioned earlier, but that's kind of how you have to do it. We're just going to keep doing the best that we can. Matthew, yeah, what do you think?
And not just go, but actually make the public comment.
Right, yeah.
I mean, for me, from my perspective, I would try to push in any way possible for greater local autonomy, and always, always, always do that. Look, if it's up to your school to make the decisions that it wants to make for your campus, great. Go for it. And if you make poor decisions or you make ineffective decisions or those decisions go bad, then your school is going to perform poorly. And if your school performs poorly, you're going to hear about it from the parents, so they're going to transfer their kids to other schools. And so like, it should just be up to the, you know, a lot of these decisions, not all of them, obviously, but like a lot of these, you know, day-to-day decisions that just sort of like affect the learning experience and the culture on the campus should be left up to the administration, the principals, the teachers. They know their community, they know their kids, and they have a vested interest in it. And then, you know, if they make poor decisions or they make, you know, inept decisions, It's on them. The school is going to lose money because it's going to lose enrollment. It's going to risk getting closed down. And so be it. You know, I mean, like, that's just kind of like the harsh reality. The idea of, like, you know, the state being involved and the district being involved and, you know, where's the money coming from? It's all way too complicated right now. It shouldn't be that way. If you have good quality teachers on your campus and you have a good administration, I think your school is going to run well. And I think that those people can make the decisions.
Good point. Well said, both of you. And thank you both, as always, for enlightening our conversation with your expertise. Ultimately, when we think about affecting change in spaces that feel so much bigger than us, like you were just talking about, Matt, of course it feels daunting, impossible even. The reality is it's no one person or entity's responsibility to keep this public ed machine running at optimal levels. It's all of ours. It is all of our responsibility. It is all of our duty. And it truly does take a village. I think somebody said that earlier. We are the village. Parents, staff, students, taxpayers, district and community leaders. We all have critical perspective, experience, insights, and interest, vested interest, that make all the difference in how our public institutions serve us. Education as one of those institutions is no exception, and I'd even argue maybe one of the most important in forming our collective future. I hope ultimately that this episode highlights pathways to involvement that feel accessible, because we haven't really talked about anything new. You know, it's not new PTA organizations. It's not new to have a campus or a district town hall situation or a board meeting. Those are not new things, but I just don't think that everybody is leveraging those things ultimately in the way that it could be, because I think that so many of us in all of those different stakeholder roles are exhausted, to be frank. I think that we're exhausted, we're feeling defeated, and now more than ever is time for us to really get in there and elevate our voices like we're always advocating for people to do. So with that said, I hope we've highlighted some of those pathways, and we'd love to support anybody in their advocacy efforts. We are all still very much engaged in that in our own campuses, at our districts, and even at the state level. Lance is involved even more at a national level. There's a lot of support that we can offer or opportunities we can connect listeners to for anybody who's interested in getting more involved in approaching that. So if that's you, feel free to reach out to us directly through Instagram at All Things Education Podcast for more information on how to join or start conversations about public education in your community. Texas students deserve the very best. Let's all make that happen for them.
Thank you for listening to All Things Education.
Be sure to leave us a review and share the show with everyone you know.
And if you liked what you heard, stay tuned for more compelling conversations with Natalie, Matthew, and Lance.
Until next time, Texas.